Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about a molecular tour of FEMoCo, F-E-M-O and coenzyme, I suppose that might be the story. And now this molecule is something which is a type of molecule I love. And I love it because bonds sort of sprout in three dimensions in a way which is impossible to describe, impossible to imagine, yet they're in that. It's something which really grabs your imagination. So for me, I sort of like the turpentines, the eucalyptus oils. These are the bonds which go in out of the page and link across from one side of the page to the other. That's sort of crazy. Look, I'd love to be able to describe that. And then you get things which are getting pretty close there, like the epoxies and stuff like that. And in general, you start to say, look, I'll do molecular tours, and you sort of select molecules which don't wriggle around too much. They're nice and flat. And these are these hexagons and pentagons of bonds without the hydrogens in them, with the carbons in them, which go across. But when you look at them, you can then sort of understand how these molecules can possibly work and hold and do their functions in the body and in life. But FEMoCo is just the gem of our life. It's something which we all go, yeah, like the heme molecule. The heme molecule is incredibly complex, or incredibly beautiful and interesting to look at, and how it the heme molecule sits in hemoglobin to actually activate itself. It's just a really crazy molecule. It's got so much story to it. But FEMoCo is something that, I look, to be honest, a lot of things I had seen before and just absorbed, and now I'm just struggling through relearning the periodic table, rebooting up, and learning things differently. So a FEMoCo is that, and another molybdenum things is the magic molybdenum as the sort of magic element, which I wanted to realize. I thought, where does molybdenum come from? What is it used? And it's, molybdenum is sort of like the most key element, because molybdenum is involved in nitrogen A's. So what it does, an A's means an enzyme, and so they're involved in the enzymes, living enzymes, which take some nitrogen, take a lot of cell food, I think 16 or 19 ATP, which is cell food. And so basically the cell ATP is the cell food because it goes onto a protein and turns from ATP to ADP. So adenine, adenosine, triphosphate gets pinged off, is relieved in energy when it forms adenosine diphosphate. The phosphate pings off and produces energy. So a lot of these surround here, and a lot of these move in a way and actually produce a single break apart, a nitrogen molecule, which has got a huge amount of energy, and makes an ammonia molecule. The ammonia molecule then gets used to make the amino acids. So basically, when you've got a protein, it goes just down the spine, nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon. So every third atom in a protein's backbone is a nitrogen. And to get there, that nitrogen has to be convinced, coaxed off the incredibly inert double bond, or a double, it's not a double bond, but it's a triple bond, but it's of between two nitrogens. It's a very stable stuff. And nature has to really do some massive tricks to get this to happen. And the massive tricks involves molybdenum, this trace element. So I was really interested in molybdenum. So molybdenum, chemical symbol MO, and it's down possibly period, sorry, group 6, period 5. So it's chrome, molybdenum, tungsten as you go down. So molybdenum is there, sort of like it's like molybdenum is a cross between chrome and tungsten when you go across it. So it's a fairly common one. I have to think whether chrome is, yeah, chrome is an even number of protons, so that's a relatively common one. And the only way that bacteria and plants fix the bacteria, I think it's bacteria basically do it, is with molybdenum. And this is why I don't know, I haven't been able to research and validate this. I just knew that there was a lot of molybdenum in biofilms, bacteria films, so a lot of bacteria which are fixing nitrogen leaves a lot of molybdenum around. So molybdenum is something in the soil. So what's the story of molybdenum? Well, molybdenum is one of these amazing things. Molybdenum means in ancient Greek, which is stolen from another language. So another language had the word for lead, and molybdenum, the Greeks thought that lead, that molybdenum was a type of lead. So their term for lead was molybdenum, from a different animal, so language. So there you go, this is sort of a head-scratching thing. So the origin of the word molybdenum comes from the mistake. They thought it was lead, or they thought it was lead or graphite. Combination was leadographic, was wrong, and no, it's a third one, which is a new element. And you can be forgiven for thinking that it's a graphite. So it's not like it was a lead-bearing ore, which didn't produce lead, so there's a bit of a head-scratcher, but called molybdenum. No one really had a big use for it until it was used to make armaments in World War One, sort of make proper tank armor and proper shells. As you make guns, bigger and bigger guns, you need stronger steel, or you have to re-pour your... So again, so molybdenum came in there, and then we've understood molybdenum chemistry. Now, I'm going to not be able to give you a tour of the molybdenum, Vimoco, iron, molybdenum, CO, I suppose, whatever the CO stands for. But it is a molecule which is just, I suppose the way that I sort of can understand it is a stack of plates, because the molecule is the most intricate bonding in three dimensions that you could possibly imagine. I'll put it up there. And fortunately, you do. You can just type into the internet Vimoco JMOL. I'll take you to a page, and you'll be able to rotate one of these babies around, and it's just incredible. Now, and what's at the center of it is that normally you get a cage of carbons and stuff like that, and has an iron on the inside. But this Vimoco has got a cage of iron and sulfur, an iron sulfur cage with a carbon on the inside. It's sort of like enzyme gone mad. This is, I've never seen anything like it. And the carbon in the center, does it have four bonds? No, it's got six bonds. A carbon atom with six bonds in the inner core, in a jewel. So the first thing I could say is think of a donut with a jam filling, and the carbon's the jam filling on the inside, and you've got an iron sulfur cage. Now, the iron sulfur cage, again, is this thing that the iron can do a bond. The iron has lots of bonds into that carbon, six bonds into the carbon. Six bonds into carbon. There you go. There it is. Have a look at it for yourself. And of course, as you get into the more exotic chemistry, you can't use the simple Lewis dot diagram. It's sort of like, that's a total head scratcher. But the sulfurs in general are link as a sort of cross bond, like between the two ions, you know, any ions, and let's go across 10 ions or 9 ions? There's 9 ions around the, and possibly 9 sulfurs, and 1 molybdenum, 1 carbon. Only 1 carbon. Get that. No hydrogens. Oh, is it 10 sulfurs? Because you've got... And the sort of way that I can possibly explain it is you've got to imagine a stack of plates, and a plate is a plane with atoms in it. So you start off with the bottom atom, the bottom plate, with a single dot in the centre, and that's your manganese. And down to the manganese has got thousands of, or lots of bonds, and it's a high oxidation state. And so that can bond in these fantastic ways to these two molecules. Bear look, I've only just looked at it, and so I'm just going off from memory, and the actual exercises to improve my memory. And then the next plate up has so magnesium, and beneath that is these amino acid-y type things bonded to it, two sets of it. So that's incredible. And then above that is a plate with three sulfurs. Now those sulfurs, three sulfurs, are bonded down to the carbon, and then it's bonded up to the first ring of three ions more. And then the plate above that contains the carbon, ions and sulfurs in a ring again, with bonds going absolutely everywhere. And then it reverses, it goes three ions, three sulfurs in rings and plates, with bonds going absolutely everywhere. Finally, an ion on the top, and the ion on the top is then bound onto a cysteine amino acid-ish thing. Like, I don't think there's a nitrogen in there, but I suppose it would be, have to be a nitrogen if it's amino acid. But the cis is famously the basic amino acid, which has got a sulfur and a hydrogen. So there's another really basic, the basic amino acid's got no side chain. The next one has, I think, a side chain of one carbon and then a oxygen and hydrogen, or can have a sulfur version of that with a side chain of carbon and a sulfur and hydrogen. Now that's crowned on top of the iron. So look, that's the best I can do at this point in time. I've just looked at it. I can't cram it into my memory. But and then that's not it. It itself doesn't work. There's also a manganese and phosphate coenzyme which goes with it, so you need two enzymes for it to work together. Those two things which have got molybdenum in them are the basis of making fertilizer. This is the biological version. We make fertilizers by getting hydrogen and nitrogen together and say, make the fertilizer. You know, just huge amounts of energy makes fertilizer. But this actually, the plants produce the food, and the food goes down to the these nitrogen-fixing legumes and things like that, and actually makes the and fixes the nitrogen. So nitrogen fixation is something which in the very early times required lightning bolts to crack down on the earth. And at lightning, you can sort of smell that burnt ozone-y nitrogen thing where the bonds are broken by lightning. And then biology eventually worked out how to do its own internal lightning, bacterial-wise. And this is deep down in the soil. So the nitrogen goes into the soil, the food goes into the soil, and using this fabulous thing called molybdenum. And I just thought, check out the story of molybdenum. I don't know, just think, going back and chasing, you're trying to, one of the things I'm trying to do is gradually learn the Lanthanide series, and I'll just quickly finish off with half the Lanthanide series. The Lanthanide series, as far as I'm concerned, is 14 long, because I'm a quantum physicist. I put lutetium up where it should be in the transition metals, but starting off, you've got lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, promethium, there you go, praseodymium, neodymium, samarium, europium. So if I remember that, so the reason I sort of remember europium is it's the one which is sort of dipping down in density and dipping down the size. So it's following the subtable, and so after that it's gadolinium, and then terbium. Then I'm really struggling, and then there's holmium in there. There's another one, dysprosium. This really stupid element, one which is extremely rare, has got no use. That's my type of element. And then coming further across, you've got erbium, thulmium, which is just another way of getting name you Sweden again, and then the name of the small village again, ytterbium, as opposed to yttrium. There's yttrium and ytterbium, and erbium and terbium. There you go. How about that for craziness? However, buried in the periodic table is molybdenum, and molybdenum is absolutely critical for making the backbone of everything that's alive. That's a crazy one. So it's something I want to learn more about, and eventually I'll learn how to give you a proper molecular tour. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.